different alternatives under consideration. Document number 8, is what I mentioned before, is a discussion document that the PDT has prepared regarding the Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack. In light of the last committee meeting, the committee requested us to kind of revisit the methods used and some of the data used. So that's a longer document explaining some background about the Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack. Document number 9 is a description of the protected resources affected by this fishery, as well as a description of the different impacts expected from the alternatives. Document 10 is an updated section with more economic analyses than what was previously in the document, as well as some social impact analyses of the different alternatives. Document 11 is the decision document. I also recommend keeping that one handy. We'll be using that mostly during the day. That tries to summarize the 16 different decisions we have to make this morning and this afternoon, as well as it highlights and tries to summarize the major analyses and different issues related to the different alternatives to help in decision-making. Lastly, document 12 is a copy of the presentation I'm going to start with this morning. And again, the additional correspondence is from Atlantic Capes Fisheries. And again, this letter is related to the open area days at sea allocation, as well as a few other issues related to Framework 19 and the scallop FMP. So those are all the documents that you need. I'm going to just start with document number 12, a copy of my presentation. And I recommend, again, having document 11 handy because I'll be referencing that through the presentation. So again, today we want to review and approve Framework 19 alternatives, as well as review and approve research priorities for the next 2 fishing years. There are 16 major decisions today, and there are 3 primary components of this framework. Decisions 1 through 7 in your decision document are all related to the specifications for the next 2 fishing years, the details of which areas should open, how many days at sea should be allocated, and so forth. Decisions 8 through 12 are related more in relation to decisions that we made related to Amendment 11. So there are some new things in this framework that we don't usually consider in biennial frameworks, and there a few of them are listed there in parentheses, but again, part of the reason that this amendment is a little more complex than in the past is we have a lot of new things we have to consider based on Amendment 11. Again, Amendment 11 is not in place yet. Council has submitted it. It's in review with the agency right now. We are expecting a proposed rule sometime soon. So it's a little awkward in this document. We have to have alternatives that basically assume that the amendment is disapproved, and then also alternatives that assume it is approved. So it's been a little complicated in that respect as well. Decisions 13 through 16 are related to other issues that have come up during development of this framework, not necessarily related to the first 2. So again, I'm going to just go decision by decision very quickly, a slide or so, per decision to kind of set up the rest of the day. Decision 1 is really very linked to decision 2, and it's kind of up to the council. The way we handled it at the advisory panel and committee level was to make this decision first, and then you end up by default kind of narrowing your decision for decision 2. Depending on how discussions go today, the council may actually want to do these together. The first one is related to identifying new rotational closures for scallop management. Basically, the PDT reviewed the 2007 survey data and identified certain areas with high recruitment tows. And there were 2 areas that really lit up, one within the Hudson Canyon vicinity and one within the Great South Channel. The first figure you have here, the PDT basically reviewed this data and using the Amendment 10 guidelines for identifying new closures, which is detailed in Amendment 10, there's guidance about the parameters of the area, how large they should be, minimum size, and so forth. These 2 alternatives were suggested by the PDT as a starting point. The first one is a 4x4 10-minute square within the, as I said, right above Elephant Trunk, that region in the middle. The green 4x4 is one proposal. And the second one was a slightly larger 5x5 10-minute polygon that would include some other tows that had higher biomass as well. These alternatives were circulated to the advisors pretty much at our first advisory panel meeting on October 10th. The advisors were more supportive of actually maintaining the current Hudson Canyon boundary, which is the more irregular shape. The current one is not necessarily north-south boundaries. You'll see it goes on an angle there. That's the current Hudson Canyon area, and the advisors and committee support actually maintaining that as being the closed area and not the two originally proposed by the PDT. In terms of the Great South Channel, the next slide is a figure that shows the area in green in the center is another area that lit up with high recruitment. And again, the intent of this is to identify areas with high recruitment and tows with large amounts of small scallops, less than 70 millimeters, identify those regions, and then close them for several years to later reopen as access areas. This alternative ended up not being as popular, and in general, the advisors discussed it. It made sense to, of course, identify an area like this to later kind of reap the benefits of grow out from this type of area, but because of a lot of other complicating factors that go on in Georgia's Bank in terms of management, this area was more problematic for people to support. Specifically, part of this closure, it overlaps with the recent cod HAPC that's been identified for this region, and there's concerns that it's still unclear what's going to happen with that in terms of access from fishing vessels. So there was concern about closing it now before we have that planned, because access in the future could be restrained. The other issue is also the yellowtail bycatch tack that exists on Georgia's Bank and the southern New England. This region does basically straddle the southern New England and Cape Cod stock areas for yellowtail, and it was unclear still whether an actual yellowtail tack would be necessary for this program. So those were the two main issues raised about this, and ultimately the advisors and committee did not prefer this to be included in this framework. I do have a few figures here. They're hard to see in your paper copy, but in general, we discussed at the advisory panel meeting at length the different potential impacts on effort and where people were fishing in terms of these new proposed areas from the last few fishing years. There's some here from limited access vessels. This is VMS data, and in terms of hours fished. And the next figure is general category vessels combined from 2005 through 2007 on the next. Thank you. So you can see the red spots are higher levels of effort, some overlapping with these new closures and some not. So the majority of the analyses in terms of closing these areas or opening them are very linked to the overall scenario that ends up being allocated to this fishery in terms of specifications. I just want to go through a few slides first to set up the different scenarios that were considered in this framework so people understand them. We didn't have them fully fleshed out at the last council meeting, so I just want to take a step back to do that now. At the September council meeting, the council clarified that while the reference point for overfishing threshold changed to 0.29 based on results from the recent assessment, the council wanted to maintain the target of F equals 0.2. Now, normally we wouldn't have necessarily had this discussion, but in light of a new assessment and a new reference point being recommended, the council decided to basically just revisit this discussion and see if, in fact, they wanted to maintain an F of 0.2 or discuss something different because the reference point in terms of the threshold had been recommended to change from 0.24 to 0.29. This is detailed in the document number one, which is the framework document, pages 45 through 47. Now, at the last council meeting, we did discuss this for a little while, and ultimately the overfishing threshold of 0.29 that people should be aware of is based on an assumption that fishing mortality is spatially uniform. And this is where it gets very problematic for the scallop fishery in particular, because that is definitely not the case whatsoever. We have closures, we have areas that are fished more heavily after an access area opens, for example, and then different parts of open areas that have higher abundance than others. So it's anything but uniform. And because of that, the fishing mortality rate that maximizes yields per recruit will be definitely less than 0.29. For this reason, the PDT did recommend at the September Council meeting to maintain this target of 0.2 to prevent the possibility of severe localized overfishing that could occur at higher targets. There were other reasons discussed as well at that Council meeting, and ultimately the Council agreed to maintain it for now, and no other alternative targets were discussed. The other point that I wanted to point out, so basically once we got that direction from the last Council meeting to keep it at 0.2, all of the scenarios that the PDT then analyzed basically met the 0.2 target. So because of all the different potential closures and so forth, we ended up with, I think, 7 different scenarios, and at the end of the day, they all ended up reaching a target of 0.2. There are 2 things that have changed since the committee meeting that I want to highlight if people have been attending those meetings and for committee members themselves. 2 important things changed since that committee meeting that I want to identify so people don't get confused looking at some of the figures and projections. The first one is related to the no-action alternative. During that committee meeting, kind of during breaks, not necessarily discussed at the table, was that the document and the alternative that the PDT had analyzed for no-action was not technically correct. Well, we were under the impression that the allocations that were available in 2007 would roll over, and that is the case, but there is something I want to point out that makes it a little bit different for the access areas on Georges Bank. Specifically in open areas, it's true that the no action would roll over the same days that were allocated in 2007. That would be 51 for full-time, 20 for part-time, and 4 for occasional. Scallop vessels would also receive the same scallop access area rotation allocations, which would be 3 trips for full-time vessels in elephant trunk and 856 trips for general category vessels. However, there is a difference for Georges Bank access areas, and there's a part in the regulations that the rotation schedule is actually the thing that trumps this part of the regulations. And it's on a 2 years open, 1 year's closed rotational schedule for the 3 different areas on Georges Bank. So the PDT ended up originally analyzing an alternative for no action that had essentially 2 access areas opening in 2008, and the real no-action alternative only has 1. And that's because of this detailed part of the regulations that we were not aware of until after this committee meeting. So essentially, this change is going to reduce overall landings for the no-action alternative compared to what the committee saw on October 11th. What this does is any of the analyses we did that compared the alternatives to the no action will not seem as negative anymore, basically, because there's overall less revenue because there's 1 less access area trip under the no action alternative than we had originally included. So I will explain that as we get to the different tables if people are confused about it, but in general, that's what the impact of this revised no action alternative is. The second thing that I want to point out before getting into the different scenarios is that at the committee meeting, a new alternative was basically developed in light of the concern of lower open area days at sea allocated under the different alternatives. The PDT was concerned about that as well and ended up recommending that the committee consider and advisors consider actually doing an average of an F of 0.2 over 2 years rather than 0.2 each year. So essentially what we did is recommended borrowing a couple days from 2009 and allocating those in 2008. And if you get to the next slide, you'll see all the different scenarios that were considered. Karen? All right, thanks. So this is a table with all the different allocations for each of the access areas as well as the open area days at sea estimated for an individual full-time vessel all the way to the right. As I mentioned, it's pretty much impossible to see. I highlighted in red what's changed from the no action. And originally in no action, there was 1 trip allocated to Nantucket Lightship, but now you can see that says closed. And the other change down below in no action is originally we had analyzed 2 trips in Georges Bank region for the no action, whereas now actually there'll be 0. And again, that's in light of the rotation schedule and how the regulations are written, that an area cannot be allocated any trips if it wasn't open the previous year. So those are the differences with the no action that I was explaining. The preferred alternative, highlighted in green, is the one that ultimately was preferred by the advisors and the committee. It includes 5 access area trips each year. The first year is 1 in Nantucket Lightship and 4 in Elephant Trunk. And in terms of open area days at sea, it's recommending 35 days at sea for 2008 and 42 days for 2009. Those are the preferred alternatives. I won't go through all the others. I'll just explain what the acronyms are to you so when you're going through the analyses, they make more sense. DMV3 and DMV2 are basically with the Delmarva region closed for both years is the first alternative, and the Delmarva region opening in 2009 under the second alternative. The reason we have these two scenarios is these two do not include any new rotational closures. So this would essentially just be allocating 1 trip in Georges Bank and 4 in Elephant Trunk, but no new closures for scallop rotation. The next few alternatives scenarios include the new closure alternatives, the first one being a Hudson Canyon closure, the smaller. The next one is the Hudson Canyon, the larger, 5x5, 10-minute square. Then there's the South Channel closure. And then the last scenario considered was actually closing both of the two areas that showed up with high recruitment levels for these two fishing years at least. And you can see as you go through the analyses, the impacts and what that does to various parts of the fishery in terms of catch and bottom time and LPUE and so forth. Just so, for your information, Hudson Canyon small, the analyses are very similar when the actual current Hudson Canyon boundary is used. So in looking at things, you can keep that in mind that we expect similar impacts from that. Okay, so I'm just going to focus again on the preferred alternative at this point to save time. And compared to 2007, this alternative is recommending 16 less days at sea for an individual vessel in terms in 2008. That is a 31% reduction from 2007 to 2008, and 9 fewer days at sea in 2009, and that basically is an 18% reduction compared to 2007. What I want to point out, though, is that while the no-action alternative includes 51 open area days at sea, which would include those reductions, the no-action alternative does not include as many access area trips, and that makes a very big difference in terms of total catch and impacts on the resource and affected environment. So under the no-action, in the first year you have 4 trips, and the second year you only have 3 in total. So your catch under no action is actually 43.3 million pounds and revenue approximately 336 million pounds. So I just wanted to clarify that comparing it to no action, the preferred alternative does have fewer days at sea, but it has more access area trips, so things even out a bit, and this table tries to highlight that. So the first row there is day at sea allocations for a full-time vessel. You can see 2006 allocations as well as 2007 compared to the preferred alternative estimates for 2008 and 2009. The next row are access area trips. Again, in 2006 and 2007, there were 5 access area trips allocated. However, under the no action, as I explained, that's going to go down to 4 trips in 2008 and 3 trips in 2009. Overall landings for fishing year 2006 have been approximately 55.8 million pounds. Fishing year 2007 is not over yet, but we do expect similar landings. 2008, the projected catch is 44.4 million pounds, and for 2009, 45.9. So the percent change from the 2006 fishing year, there is a reduction of 20% the first year and 18% using the next year compared to 2006. However, again, under no action, the projected catch is 43.3, so they're actually, the preferred alternative is projecting higher catch than the no-action alternative. In terms of revenue, however, the revenue stream is expected to be similar to what it is in 2006 and into 2008 and 2009, with less catch around, the price is expected to increase, and in general, change in revenue from fishing year 2006 is expected to either decline at about 5.8% or even increase slightly to 3.6% if higher prices are estimated or used in the estimate. To be on the safer side, it's probably good to go with the lower range, which would be $340 million in 2008 and $347 million in 2009. So in terms of revenue, there would be those potentially 5.8 less for the first year and 3.8 less for the second year. Okay. A lot of people, of course, are concerned with the open area days at sea going from 51 to 35. And this pie chart was presented at the advisory panel and committee meeting and probably illustrates the main reason why. And this is a distribution of exploitable biomass by region. And as you can see, 32% of exploitable biomass is in the elephant trunk area. That's the reason that all of the scenarios are leaning toward allocating basically 7 trips over the next 2 years, because the vast majority of biomass is in that region. In the Georges Bank EFH closures, there's over 20% of the biomass in those closed areas that are not accessible to the fishery. In terms of open areas, if you look at the lighter purple and, I guess, lighter pink, that's Mid-Atlantic Open and Georges Bank Open. Together, that equals 17%. And 17% of the entire exploitable biomass is basically available for vessels under open area days at sea. And when you compare these different percentages, it basically irons out the reason why there's more access area landings allocated in the next 2 fishing years than open areas. And there really just is not a whole lot of biomass to support a lot of open area effort. Okay. So those are basically the first 2 decisions in your decision document. I did not go through, let me just kind of do an overview of the decision document. The first page explains, again, the different decisions before you. Turning the page to Decision 1, you can see a brief summary of background of Decision 1, some tables of the different alternatives under consideration and the sections and page numbers you can find them in. And then following each decision, there's a bunch of bullets. I'm not going to read those now, but hopefully those help highlight the different impacts we expect by topic for the different decisions. So for Decision 1 and Decision 2, again, I would recommend kind of considering those together. Turning the pages into Decision 2, you'll see the same table that I had on the screen with the different scenarios, as well as some bullets related to biological impacts and projections on biomass and expected bottom area, time, and so forth. There are several bullets related to the economic impacts from the different alternatives, as well as some general statements about expected habitat and protected resource and other social impacts. Page 7, we tried to pull out a few of the key economic tables because there are so many. It's hard to get through them all, but we did pull out some of the key information in terms of short-term and long-term projections and impacts on revenue, days at sea used, and so forth in terms of both short-term and long-term. So those tables on page 7 are helpful, and there's text, again, explaining them in more detail in the main framework document. So those are the first 2 decisions. I took a little extra time with those because they're obviously the main part of this framework. The rest of the decisions hopefully are a bit more minor. So Decision 3, moving on through the decision document, is related to unused 2005 Hudson Canyon trips. Again, very quickly, this area opened in 2001 through 2005. There were suboptimal trips taken in 2005, so Framework 18 allowed these unused trips to carry over for the next 2 fishing years. And there still are unused trips left in this area. We're expecting somewhere in the ballpark of 100 or so, and maybe even fewer by the time this framework would be implemented. So we had the no-action alternative. Basically, these trips would expire. And another alternative would be to allow vessels to use these trips for another 3 months. And the intent there would be to allow for the spring growth of the scallops in that region, so vessels would have until the end of May rather than March 1st. The preferred alternative by the committee and the advisors was no action. However, the advisors were really very split on this. I think the vote was 3 to 3-4, something like that. Or anyway, it was very close. And so obviously there's still some issues there. The committee ended up identifying the no action as preferred. Again, on page 8 of the decision document, there's more detailed analyses of the expected impacts of this 3-month extension versus the TRIPS expiring. Decision 4 is related to the elephant trunk area. Again, the allocations for this access area are related to decision 2, so based on which scenarios selected would identify how many trips should be allocated to this region. This table really only includes the other parts of the elephant trunk program that are under consideration. One would be to continue the seasonal closure for reducing interactions with sea turtles. That's a 2-month closure that has been in place under Framework 18. The other one is related to the notice action procedure that was also in Framework 18 that would reduce effort in this area if updated assessments suggested that it should be. And the only reason we've added this for people to more specifically consider is that the PDT recommended adding a new trigger, whereas before it was just based on biomass within the elephant trunk area. We recommended including another trigger that would be basically if the overall F estimate for the entire resource became that it was over the threshold, that again a trip within elephant trunk would be reduced. The committee agreed with this additional trigger and that it should be included. And if you recall, we kind of got in this situation this past year with the elephant trunk area, and we ended up having to go through emergency action to reduce effort in the elephant trunk area to prevent overfishing. So this would hopefully alleviate if we're in a similar situation in the future that we don't have to have emergency action and we could do that through notice action instead. The seasonal closure issue at first in development of this document was a bit unnoticed. We figured, well, we'll roll it over. It's been too early to tell if it's the right time period. It's only been in place for one fishing year. We don't really know. There's not a whole lot of data to suggest different time periods and so forth. However, because in the Delmarva discussion, which is the next decision, that area is also considering a seasonal closure, the conversations got mixed together, and the committee ended up revisiting this completely based on discussions at the advisory panel level as well. So I do recommend going to the meeting summaries from both the advisory panel and committee meeting related to these turtle closures, as well as the document, I believe it's number 9, that goes through the different protected resources impacts of these two different alternatives. Very quickly, it's basically just that it ended up kind of coming more to light that these seasonal closures may have these potential benefits, but more primary reasons for them could be to help reduce non-harvest mortality on scallops during these warmer months. So in light of that, anyway, ultimately the committee ended up deciding to move this alternative to the considered but rejected section, primarily because it was almost through discussion becoming more of a reason for scallop mortality issues than for turtles, and it was becoming less apparent and so forth. So anyway, there's still probably some justification related to some of the turtle data, particularly for the elephant trunk area, in terms of bycatch rates being higher in September than in the areas outside of elephant trunk. But again, there's been a lot of discussion about this, and I recommend you kind of reading through that stuff rather than going through it all now. Or we can, when we get to this decision, get into it in more detail. Decision 5 is similar to elephant trunk. The same decisions have to be made related to Delmarva. Again, this region was not expected to open in this framework, but the 2007 data suggested that the biomass within this area would support limited effort, basically about one access area trip for 2009. So if that scenario is identified as the preferred strategy to open this region in 2009, the committee did consider another seasonal closure for this region as well, since it's near elephant trunk, as well as a notice action procedure, because there is a lot of uncertainty with the biomass in this region since many of the scallops are small. The seasonal closure for this region is actually a 3-month period rather than a 2-month period, and that's based on the limited bycatch rate data we do have for turtle interactions with scallop dredge gear, and August being one of the few months where there was a slightly higher bycatch rate of turtles in the Delmarva region compared to the areas outside of Delmarva. Again, the committee recommended moving the seasonal closure alternative to considered and rejected. Again, the advisors supported this alternative as maybe potentially having some benefits for sea turtles, but more primarily to reduce non-harvest mortality on scallops, having higher mortalities on deck during those warmer months as well as when they're returned to the water. Decision 6. And again, in the decision document, there's more bullets about the expected impacts of these different alternatives that I recommend you glancing through. Decision 6 is related to a crew size restriction in access areas. And Framework 18, the last biennial framework, eliminated the crew size restriction for access areas. So now there's no limit on limited access vessels going in, or either scalloped vessels going in access areas. The committee decided to revisit this decision based on input from the advisors originally because people were concerned that this just had too much potential for vessels if catch rates were lower or scallops were smaller than anticipated for vessels carrying extra crew and having higher mortality on scallops. Ultimately, however, after reviewing the data, again, we don't have a lot of observer data from Elephant Trunk area yet, but from the limited data we did look through from the different observed trips from 2006 and 2007, it does not appear that vessels are, in fact, taking more crew and targeting larger scallops. There was no evidence of that at all. So the advisors and the committee ended up preferring to leave the access areas with no crew restrictions for now, and it was also referenced that any shell stocking and types of in-shell scalloping that may develop could be impacted if there were a limit on crew. Decision 7 is related to deck loading. And currently, if you are a vessel leaving the Elephant Trunk area, you're not permitted to leave that area with more than 50 bushels of in-shell scallops on board. And that was put in place during the emergency action for Elephant Trunk. This alternative considers using that same strategy for all of the access area programs as a way to reduce non-harvest mortality. The committee, I don't believe the advisors had time to directly address this, but the committee does support a prohibition on deck loading. And there's two options in the document, one with several exceptions to that and one without. And the committee's preference is to go with no exceptions. There was an exception for general category vessels carrying an observer and one for someone who had to terminate a trip. So the committee recommends option A. Okay, so now we're finished with the different decisions related to the specifications for the next two fishing years. The next several decisions are related to Amendment 11 decisions that we made only several months ago. The quarterly hard tack for the general category fishery, if you recall, is something that needs to be in place for the transition period to the limited entry program for the general category fishery. And the quarterly hard tack that was basically evaluated is that this, based on decisions in Amendment 11, this fishery will get 10% of the total projected catch. So that 10% of catch has to be divided into different quarters. Two options were considered. The committee preference was option A, which would have 35% of the catch in quarter one, 40% in quarter two, 15% in quarter three, and 10% in quarter four. These were based on historical landings. However, some of them were elevated or reduced based on things that we expect to be allocated in 2008. For example, there's going to be a lot of Elephant Trunk trips allocated during quarter one. So quarter one was bumped up, if you will, to kind of account for that. Also, there was input that we should keep quarter four a little higher to support traditional winter fisheries that take place in more northern waters. So that was the discussion. There are some impacts, again, in the decision document explained and so forth related to this. Decision 8B we have underneath Decision 8, because this is related to how much access the general category vessels should get during this transition period into access areas. The document considered either 2% or 5% of the TAC per access area. Ultimately, the committee ended up supporting 2% in a way to hopefully reduce derby fishing in these different access areas when you have all of these vessels. Originally, the advisors actually supported 5% because there was the idea that the general category vessels should also benefit from the higher catch rates and everything else that you get with a access area trip. But ultimately, I think as the discussion progressed into the next day at the committee level, there was concern that 5% in elephant trunk, for example, would be a huge chunk of the total catch allocated to the general category fishery and could impact other vessels that don't plan to participate in that region. So ultimately, the committee supports 2% for this transition period until the IFQ program can be implemented. Decision 9 is related to Decision 8B. It's basically the same exact decision. However, this is related to when the limited entry program would be implemented with IFQs. So this would be post-hard tack, when general category vessels receive an individual fishing quota, how much, basically, of access areas should the general category fishery be awarded? And several alternatives were considered, but basically the overall strategy was that the council decided to allocate this fishery 5% in Amendment 11 in general, so it made sense to carry that 5% over to the access areas as well. However, the committee did prefer allocating 5% for all access areas except 0% for closed area 2, which is that middle alternative. And the reason they did that is that so few vessels use the allocation out in that area that instead, if the vessels were allocated open area effort instead, that would have it would be more beneficial for the general category vessels. There was some concern about groundfish vessels that may be out in closed area 2 participating in SAP programs, but it's very unlikely that there are going to be any yellowtail SAP programs in closed area 2 in the next two fishing years, and that's why the committee went with the alternative in the middle. Decision 10 is also related to the IFQ program for general category fishermen. If you recall, because it's an IFQ fishery, we need to include a cost recovery program as required by the Magnuson Act to cover the costs associated with an IFQ program. The committee considered two different alternatives based on different programs that are in place in other parts of the country. The first one is basically the IFQ holder, permit holder, is responsible to pay the government directly for up to 3% of their ex-vessel value. And the other alternative is that payments are made through the dealer. Originally, the advisors reviewed these and ultimately recommended that they would prefer if the responsibility was with the IFQ holder themselves rather than having to depend on a dealer and other things that could go on with it being linked to through their dealer. When the committee discussed this, the way it's worded on page 35 is very detailed about how this cost recovery program would be implemented. That's page 35 of the main document. And it's very detailed. I'm not going to go through it now. We can when we get to this decision if you want. But it explains when certain payments would be due and how they would be paid for, et cetera. The only other kind of decision the council should consider related to cost recovery program is how basically that cost is determined. One thing that the committee considered would be that the value of that ex-vessel percentage would actually be based on actual landings for that individual vessel. At the end of the year, they would add up all of their landings and the revenue that they got from those landings, and the vessel would pay 3% of that. The other strategy would be more of an average of all ex-vessel values for general category vessels that year would be applied to the fishery, so it would be an average rather than an individual percentage. The committee's preferred alternative is that the IFQ holder pay and the fee be based on an average of ex-vessel value. Decision 11 is related to the Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack, again, something that is in response to Amendment 11 decisions. I have a note here to see document number 8 for more information. As I explained this morning, when we get to this decision, there is a document that lays out the different strategies that the PDT used as well as the main DMR in terms of estimating what this tax should be, and I'd rather just go through that later in more detail when we get to it than now. But in general, a hard tack does have to be identified in this framework for this region for both fishing years. The PDT's estimate is somewhere in the ballpark of 64,000 to 70,000 pounds, and the main DMR's proposal, which uses a different method, including different landings and so forth, is, I think, closer to 120,000 pounds. So that's what we can discuss later. The committee ultimately didn't select one or the other. They requested that the PDT review the methods used by Maine DMR, and that's what we have done, and that's what's prepared in document number 8. Decision 12. Again, this is another one related to Amendment 11. Amendment 11 stipulated that a certain level of catch has to be identified to estimate incidental catch mortality, and the PDT looked back at previous VTR and dealer records for incidental catch, and the estimate from that work is 50,000 pounds would be removed from the total catch before any allocations are made to the rest of the fleet. And again, there's really no decision here. It's just a response to Amendment 11 requirement, which may or may not be implemented. There is one thing that I'm not clear about is if this is not accepted in Amendment 11, should this framework still remove this amount of catch from the top? It has not been removed in the past, so I'm just not clear if Amendment 11 is not approved, what we're supposed to do with this figure, or if we reallocate it to the fishery later. So that's one, I guess, outstanding thing. Decision 13 is related to the overfishing definition. Again, the reason that this topic was included in this framework is because this summer there was a new scallop assessment. The scallop assessment used the proposal, basically the preferred option, used a new method and used a new model and many new different parameters that went into estimating scallop abundance and biomass. And primarily since that assessment was available and was suggesting new reference points, this document includes an alternative that would revise the current overfishing definition to basically use those outputs from that model, and they are in different units. The old reference points are in kilograms per tow based on the survey, and the new CASA model actually produces a metric ton amount of abundance in terms of pounds. So that's a different unit, and we would have to change that through this framework. And again, in what I was mentioning this morning, that because this new model with all these new estimates that we went through at the last council meeting is recommending a higher reference point for the overfishing threshold, the council did discuss at the last council meeting whether the same F target should be maintained or if something else should be considered. Again, there were no specific motions related to either of these at the last committee meeting. We didn't really have time to get through everything. However, the committee did discuss the potential of a higher F target, but ultimately no motion was made related to that topic. Decision 14 is related to the over-observer set-aside program. Based on work that we did in Amendment 13 this year on the observer set-aside program, some issues were raised about the current program in terms of how it's working and problems and so forth. So this document includes two alternatives that are specific to issues that have come up. The first one would be a higher compensation rate for vessels. Again, this is the industry-funded program where vessels pay for observers from the set-aside. And a higher compensation rate would be awarded to vessels on an open area trip compared to an access area trip. There are details in the framework, I'm sorry, I think it's document 10, the economic impact document, about potential examples that we've included. Again, it's ultimately up to the agency to assign the compensation rates after the framework is submitted based on recent prices and things like that. But we do have some example scenarios in the document that include a higher compensation rate for open areas. The other one alternative are small adjustments recommended by the observer program. And the committee has reviewed these and ultimately identified in the document section 282 the different specific adjustments that should be made to the observer program. There are a few that are the committee requested more clarity on. from what I understand, the observer program's here today to answer some of those questions. And when we get to this topic, we can get into these in more detail. But there's definitely a handful of things that are being suggested to be changed through this framework. Okay, decision 15. Again, this came up during development of Framework 19 as a request from the industry to consider a 30-day VMS power down provision. This would allow vessels to power down their VMS units for a minimum of 30 days. This ultimately became really not a cost issue. The vessels will still have to pay for their VMS units. It's more of a burden type of thing and a worry about getting power to their VMS units and so forth. The committee and advisors just really ran out of time, so there's no preferred alternative for this. Some concerns have been raised about, you know, why mess with a enforceability issue. It's in place now. It's not a huge cost. There have been some concerns raised about reducing enforceability by using this measure. But in general, we've also heard support about it to just reduce that burden of having to worry about your VMS unit. Decision 16 is the last decision related to clarifying when a vessel can leave on an access area trip. This was basically a request from the agency. They've been getting questions about this, and it's different from the regulations for other fisheries. So it was more of a clarification about when a vessel can leave for an access area trip, that being when the area opens or can they leave before. The committee recommends that it maintain the no action, which is that a vessel can leave port before an access area opens, but they cannot go into the access area until it opens. And again, the reason being that in this mobile fleet, that would be a disadvantage to vessels from farther away if they had to wait until the area opened. And there is a possession limit for the access trips anyway, so those were the arguments for maintaining no action. The last slide here is just a reminder that we have to review the research priorities for the next 2 years and approve them before we leave today. That concludes my presentation. Unless there's questions, I recommend, again, going through the decision document, doing decisions 1 and 2 together. We've taken all of the committee motions from the last committee meeting, and most of them are covered in terms of these 16 decisions, but there are some that the committee didn't have time to get to. And again, decision 1 and 2 can be taken together or they can be taken separately. That's all I have.
Okay, Dave, you have obviously have committee motions, right? I think as we go through the motions, we can deal with the questions then.
So if we could start with the first motion that you have, get that up. Okay, so the on behalf of the committee, move to approve committee and AP recommendation for new rotational area in the Hudson Canyon to be the existing Hudson Canyon area, which excludes the southwest portion that overlaps the current Elephant Trunk area.
Okay, that's a committee motion. It does not require a second. Discussion on the motion. Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Paul Howard.
This area is awful close to shore, and I think we had some anecdotal information that there was a... Is this the area where we had anecdotal information that there was a lot of poaching going on into those closed areas when they were closed, or is that a different area, D? And if that's the area where there was some illegal activity, would the design of the closed area help enforcement at all?
Well, I'll let them address that. Paul, it was related to Elephant Trunk. This is just north of that, a little bit further offshore, but always those concerns, yeah.
Anyone else in the council? Okay, you ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Unanimous. Dave, you're on a roll.
Hope it's all this easy, right? The second motion is for the overall package, so to speak, to accept the preferred scenario, which is row two in the tables, as a preferred overall management alternative for 2008 and 2009 specifications. This alternative has an average F of 0.2 over 2 years to increase open area days at sea in 2008 and reduce days at sea in 2009, specifically 35 days in 2008 compared to 30 and 42 days in 2009 compared to 47. This preferred alternative includes that any unused 2005 Hudson Canyon trips would expire February 29th, 2008.
Okay, it's a committee motion. Anyone on the council? Anyone in the audience? Dave Frula.
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. You have our letter. There's two issues here that are tied up in the decisions two and three that we want to raise. The first is the issue of the target overfishing F of 0.2, and the second is the open area days at sea allocation for 2008 and 2009. They are obviously linked, but they're also separate decisions because as we read Amendment 10 and the flexibility to set days at sea, there is some flexibility to vary from your target F rate based on spatial stock conditions, which is what the PDT has identified as a concern. You have our letter. You have some of our more active members have submitted their own letter taking a different view on the open area days. I would like to stress some of the elements of commonality here for you. The first is, and I think it was highlighted by the Scallop PDT, that the real issue that's driving what would be a 30 or 40% cut in open area days and a reduction of catches at a time when the stock is at 1.5 times the biomass target and only projected to go up no matter what you're doing, is the fact that 21% of the resource are in habitat closed areas. I mean, that needs to be thought about, and I guess after the meeting in September, the fact that the Scallop PDT has brought this issue so frontally forward is important, and it's important for you all to recognize that you can't delink these habitat decisions from scallop decisions because scallops don't swim very far. That's an issue for next year. How it's handled this year, again, is an issue where there's some disagreement within the industry. Stepping back, again, there is a concern, and I think it was pretty universal that no matter how people came out, they were awfully surprised to see open area days at sea going down by 40% in 2007, again, when the stock is doing great. And no matter how you slice it, the biomass is going to go up, and you're at 1.5 times your target biomass. So we would urge consideration of additional days. Again, there's the separate issue down the road of the overfishing target. I think there's an independent set of reasons, and I don't want to get out ahead of myself, but there's an independent set of reasons to have your overall target correspond with your new threshold. Different model was used. As I can read the documents, the size of the scallops that are assessed and counted in the F is a little bit different. I'm not quite sure how that all works, but there's a reason for those things to correspond. Again, that would be an argument to move the open area days up if you went for 0.23. Again, I don't think they're necessarily linked. I would urge you, again, to give strong consideration to allocating some more days based on overall resource conditions. And, again, to remember that what's driving the cuts here is not overall scallop abundance, it's habitat closed areas.
Anyone else in the audience? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. There's two things that I'm very concerned about in this fishery. One is that we're not achieving anywhere near optimum yield, which is a role that we're supposed to be achieving here. For a lot of reasons that we can't address in this framework, but I feel we're falling short on the order of 15 to 20 million pounds a year, which is a very large value to the fishery. Now, there are one big issue, of course, is what's locked up in habitat closures. The other issue is we're not accurately understanding what's taking place in the bulk of the open areas because they're unsurveyed. And you could see that for yourselves if you look at the presentations on Decision 1 in the decision document. If you look at where the Hudson Canyon area chart, for example, and look at what's surveyed and where the recruitment is. And then just flip a couple of pages further and look at limited access effort and look at general category effort. And you'll see a vast part of the open area fishery occurs in areas that are not being surveyed. And a vast part of the general category landings in 2003, 2004, 2005, probably 10 to 20 million pounds of scallops were landed where the fishing mortality was charged to the survey areas, but they came from unsurveyed areas. I just came back last week. I was out testing a new survey dredge. There's 4-year classes of scallops all south of New York, right along the shore, right down through New Jersey, in areas that are not surveyed. And they're being protected by the 4-inch rings and the limited number of days and now the controls that, on general category. So this is just more optimum yield that's being taken off the table. And I suggested that we should have a measure put into this framework similar to notice action, where we do some surveys in these unsurveyed areas next spring so that we can make adjustments to the limited days at sea that occur in the open areas and at least start making some progress with this framework to start achieving the goal of optimum yield. We're just not achieving it. We're falling short. It's costing the economy probably $500 million a year now. And it's not accomplishing the task of fisheries management, which is food production. And I just wish this council would start considering that as a part of your role here. Thank you.
Harriet?
I would first of all also ask on behalf of myself and four other corporations that we look for more days in light of the things that David Frula just spoke about. On the second part, the Hudson Canyon, I would also ask that you also direct to what Deidre was speaking about earlier today, that we go back to Amendment 10, and it has some overall guidelines. And in those guidelines, it puts forth that when we decide what's going to be taken from these access areas, that the survey should be done and the numbers should be sure, because when you're given these trips in these access areas after Amendment 10, the limited access vessels are taken away 12 of their open days for each of the access trips they're given in closed areas. And I feel in Hudson Canyon that there was a misjudgment. There can always be misjudgments, but I would ask that it stood in back of, because 12 open days were taken. And had the limited access boats been able to take those open days in 2005, it would have been no problem. They were locked in the Hudson Canyon. Now I would ask, at minimum, that Hudson Canyon be continued through May of 2008. And I would not expect, I'm not here to ask to take any open days from any other vessels that are fishing. Because let's look at how this was done. when this was laid out for Hudson Canyon for the 204-205 year, the allocation that was going to be taken in there was accounted for in the resource and set aside. It wasn't taken in 205. Therefore, it was put over to 206 and 207. The paperwork that came out at that point, there was about 15 million pounds outstanding. And the paperwork's put out that you'd take about 7.5 each of those years. And again, the resource and the amount that was given out to the limited access vessels, again, it was accounted for in the resource. So now it's taken out again. So if we carry it over here to 208, are we again going to take it out? It's taken out 205, 206, 207. When I hear at the subcommittee meetings that we are again going to have to tax the open area or take days away, it tells me that the agency knows that that resource wasn't there. Because if you've taxed for it all those times, the mentality here since at least 86 when I've attended is the longer the resource stays on the bottom, the more it grows, the larger it is when you capture it, the better it is. So if that resource actually was there and was sitting on the bottom, it would have built itself up to more than it originally was taxed for. So the answer to the problem comes right from the agency. They knew it was an empty promise. I'm not here to take anything from anybody. I'm here to ask that you look at Amendment 10, as Deidre had to say today on no action. There are guidelines there specifically on when these allocations are given out in access areas. We are taxed. That is a quota, basically, in there. It is a promise. And I have a problem with it because of the revenue to both myself and the other owners that are involved and to the men. And also on policy. Are you therefore saying when you give out trips in the closed areas and you take away in the access areas, as you now call them, and you tax the open areas, that if people do not get their trips, just whistle Dixie? I think you're setting some kind of a precedence here. And I think this should be strongly considered. And look at Amendment 10. Thank you.
Anyone else? Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning. Jim Kendall of Effort Seafood Consulting. I attended the advisors and the committee meeting as far as these issues went, and I've got to tell you, I'm very bothered by the fact that we're continuing to ask for a decrease in days at sea, particularly in light of the fact that it's not warranted, and it's not shown to be warranted is even bigger of a problem. It's one thing to be in a rebuilding phase and trying to recover from an overfished fishery, or if overfishing is occurring, you're obligated as a council by law to take action in those situations. I need to ask Deidre because I did arrive late, but did you get that graph made up where it shows the target TAC in reference to the rebuilding of the various alternatives? There was a chart in the document that showed the various rebuilding expectations based on the different alternatives that could be adopted. And it showed that the no-action alternative still puts you well over 200,000 metric tons. But it didn't show it in reference to the target biomass. That puts that, even with no action, at over two times what is required by law. At some point, you have to look back and say, what does the rest of the law require us to do? And that's supposed to be managed to the betterment of the nation as a whole. This does not do that. This is restricting landings. In some ways, it's a lot like price fixing. I was awfully bothered by the fact that some of the actions taken at the advisors committee were driven in that direction, and I did comment on that at the time. I think David Frula's letter says it better than I'm ever going to say it, but I would hope that you've all read that and understand what it's saying. We're two times, or we will be two times higher than what we have as a target, and yet we're striving to do more and more. And the one thing I can point out is that some of this may be boom and bust, but if you're looking to have a population that is so dense in some ways that usually nature takes a step in its own where it goes out and starts causing some sort of blight or loss of it with unnatural situations occurring like this. You didn't have that? Did you? You didn't make up that new chart?
I think what you're asking is looking at the long-term exploitable biomass of the different scenarios and then comparing it to the threshold biomass.
That's right.
So really, you would just have to draw a horizontal line at 120 million pounds.
Right, and that's my point. Normally, we look at something and we're able to see where we're at and where we're going. You've got a chart now that shows the destination, but it doesn't show where you're currently at or where you're supposed to be at. And I think oftentimes that a visual aid like that would play a big role. I'm awful sorry that that's missing from the document. And I would make the request that when it does occur, we continue to do it like we always have by showing the thresholds, by the target TACs and the expected destinations or the expected amounts so you can see them in relative to one another. I once again, I hope that the council doesn't take unnecessary steps to go with a preferred scenario such as this. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Anyone on the council? Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a technical correction. F should be 0.20.
Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand.13 opposed. One abstention. Motion carries 13-1. Okay, Dave.
Okay, the next motion relates to the elephant trunk area as to approve an ETA notice action process with additional trigger that would reduce elephant trunk area allocation in 2009 by one trip if overall F is projected to be above the fishing mortality threshold in 2009. The PDT will prepare a report for council review in the fall of 2008 with updated fishing mortality rates in time for the agency to take action by February 1.
Committee motion. Discussion on the committee motion. Any questions? Anyone in the audience? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, this is where I would suggest that open area days be adjusted based on survey information collected in the spring as well. Just correcting one little component of a large fishery is just not being prepared for all sorts of possible eventualities. This should be a better system than just this one little fix. I would suggest amending it so that you could make additional changes when you find out how vast the resource is in these open areas.
Dave Frill.
David Frillo for the Fisheries Survival Fund. There's something that I just didn't understand in the framework document, and it's on page 22. I think I have the version off the website from yesterday, so I think it's the right one. It's the last paragraph, which talks about under the above set of management options, no ETA trip adjustments are needed to prevent overfishing because the overall fishing mortality target is F equals 0.172, and then there's some question marks. I'd just like to understand if there is a new F rate trigger that's more general, what it is and how it would work before any final action were taken.
Sure, I'll try to explain that, and I think that your question is actually a response to the fact that this table is still blank, and this is old language from Framework 18. Again, I believe Framework 18's triggers were based on a certain F target within the elephant trunk area being reached. So this is old text, and thank you for raising it. I believe this would have to be changed if this is passed, that the new triggers for elephant trunk would actually be based on a biomass number that will eventually be filled in Table 13 that would include certain biomass triggers within the elephant trunk area to reduce a trip. It wouldn't necessarily be based on the F within elephant trunk. So the idea being that if, for example, one-third less of the biomass in elephant trunk is seen from the following year's survey, then we would reduce it by one trip. The part that this alternative is actually addressing is on the bottom of Table 13, there's a small line that says if overall F, not for just elephant trunk, but if overall F is greater than the proposed overfishing new threshold of 0.29 for the entire scallop resource, then the trip would be reduced by one. So this F is in reference to the overall scallop resource, not just within elephant trunk.
When would you make that determination of overall F?
Second part of it says the PDT will prepare a report for the council to review in the fall of 2008. So we presume we would have the summer survey in 08, similar to how we did it this year. The PDT would meet several times, and we would prepare a report for the council sometime in the fall. And then if action had to be taken, that could be in place, it says here, so that the agency could take final action by February 1st.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Anyone on the council? Dave.
Yeah, the way this is worded, it says it can only go down. Is this strictly a one-way trip? I mean, if we do additional surveys or whatever and find the biomass is higher than expected, can it go up as well?
Yes, that's correct. This is intended. The whole idea of a notice action is because there's some uncertainty. In this case, there's so much biomass in this area, and for Delmarva, there's uncertainty because they're small, so it is a downward adjustment only. I was going to raise that from Ron's point before. These notice actions, the intent of them is not to, you know, make these small adjustments to policy. It's more that in the event of something unforeseen or the something being overestimated, you need to reduce effort to prevent overfishing. I think when the PDT discussed trying to include more notice action things, such as open area days at sea adjustments, again, with the intent of it always being a downward in case, because of the intent of a notice action not going through the normal framework process, the idea when we started adding too many things to this, it almost got to the point of just being annual management. And this is not something that the PDT is going to be able to do in a day. And the more things we add to it, it will certainly take time away from anything else the PDT would be working on. And we've had discussions at this level about annual management for this fishery, and there's reasons to do it, but there's reasons not to do it. And so far, the council's guidance has been to stay with 2 years, add notice actions when you need them for certain things to prevent overfishing. But it would be more difficult for us to get other council work done if we were doing basically almost a framework every year, if that helps answer. So, yes, it's definitely downward only.
Anyone else on the council? Paul Howard?
I think that is a concern. If we're doing things for 2 years at a time, we should buy into that and say that we're not going to look at it for 2 years and not look at it every year, because then you have to take an action, whether it's we take it or Pat. There's resources involved in taking an action. So my goal would be that if we do two-year specs, we do them for 2 years, and then, because you're going to be in the middle of doing an amendment for the limited access fleet, and you're going to have to stop and take, you know, and maybe you'd be using that information as well, but I doubt it. So, you know, that's something to think about. If you set specs, we should do it for 2 years and then live with what we've done for 2 years so we can get other things done.
We may be doing an amendment. We'll decide that in November. Anyone else? Okay, ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? No abstentions. The motion carries. One abstention. The motion carries 13-1. One abstention.
Okay. The fourth motion is to move the seasonal closure alternative to reduce potential interactions with sea turtles for ETA for the elephant trunk area to consider but rejected the consider but rejected section of Framework 19.
Discussion? Any questions? Go to D.
I just wanted to point it out because it wasn't available to people. Although you may have gotten the breadth of this conversation from the committee meeting summary, in document number 9, there is some additional analyses related from a protected resources perspective. And since they weren't mailed to you, I just want to point them out before you make this decision on page 9, basically through page 14 is sort of a summary of what we know about turtle bycatch takes within the Mid-Atlantic and so forth. And just in general, it's also described in the decision document. I didn't go through these before, but there are, from a protected resources perspective, the extra trip that will be allocated to this region is expected to have neutral or possibly negative impacts on sea turtles. And the removal of this closure could potentially increase negative impacts on sea turtles according to these analyses, since it being potentially a mitigating factor. Again, the elephant trunk area compared to the other regions is the only one that did have that higher bycatch rate substantially than the other regions. But again, these figures and tables are here, and you didn't have them before, so I just wanted to point them out.
Okay, anyone on the council? Audience? Pat?
Just to provide a little bit more background, the ETA was put in place, the ETA seasonal closure was put in place based on the bycatch rates in that area, which were higher than the outside areas at the time, and that was less than a year ago. Really don't have a lot of information to change it at this point in time other than the rates that are available on page 13, which show, in fact, that the rates in the elephant trunk area are higher. The problem is, and I think this is where the committee recommendation came from, is that turtles are distributed throughout the Mid-Atlantic. Its takes are few and far between. It's difficult to determine when you move effort around what the impacts are going to be on turtles, and you'll find that throughout the document. However, if you look at Figure 2, you'll see that, in fact, of what we know, the rates are definitely higher in elephant trunk. So, again, it's up to you. It's a precautionary measure. We know that it has produced no negative impacts at this point in time, and the measure has been in place for less than a year, just so you know the background on it.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. I've got a letter here that I will distribute in a minute. I didn't think you'd get to this until the afternoon. As far as loggerhead turtles, both for Delmarva and the elephant trunk, which will be taken in series here, I don't know whether the new information that's come out, the 5-year review of the status of loggerhead turtles, has been considered in this process and in these in the development of this framework. And this was published in August of 07, and it shows that this population of loggerhead turtles that's found in the Mid-Atlantic is in sharp decline right now. The rules on chain mats have been out and are cited as a possible solution for this. Oceana has challenged this, and it's currently being litigated and is on stay while a new biological opinion is being drafted. And any rollback in protection for loggerhead turtles in this area likely going to need a new consultation and may, in fact, need another biological opinion. So I hope that the council, before you rule anything back on this, considers those facts, that this is something that you shouldn't go into lightly. The closures are simple actions that, if you look at the analysis that's in the document right now, show that there's very little cost to the fisheries. In fact, the AP and members of the fishing industry that spoke at the AP meeting widely supported these seasonal closures, and that they make sense, that they have very little cost, they benefit the scallops, have potential benefits for the turtles, and should be supported. Another thing is that in the five-year review, the National Marine Fisheries Service Protected Resources Division down in Silver Spring and the Fish and Wildlife Service identified time area closures as a viable tool for reducing interactions between sea turtles and scallop gear. And so before we start talking about redistribution of effort, we should be thinking that this is a practical tool that needs to be considered. This approach has the support of the industry, has support of the AP, and I hope that keeping these seasonal closures in place will get your support as well. Thanks very much.
Anyone else in the audience? Is that wrong?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolitz, Fishery Survival Fund. The industry certainly wants to do everything we know that can be done to reduce any potential interactions with turtles. We've been out in the lead even before the agency was knowledgeable of what was going on. The problem we have with seasonal closures, it might be counterproductive and it might create more harm. The turtles are in patches. When I was out there a few weeks back, the three major patches of turtles I found were all outside the access areas. And if, in fact, the interactions occur when the fishery overlaps the turtles, if, in fact, you get the season wrong or the location wrong, you could create a bigger problem. And one of the problems now is that we open up the area in November, the meets are down. So the effort to catch the same quantity of scallops that would be caught in September takes 10% longer. So what you've done is you've increased the amount of bottom time and time to create interaction with turtles by 10% just by that one little action. There's a lot of unknowns here, and to say that the scientific evidence is clear about where turtles are is just incorrect. We don't know where they are or where they will be. So we need a different approach than time area closures at this point in time. Ultimately, when we know more, time area closures might be very appropriate.
Anyone else in the audience? Yes, sir.
Kurt Larson, Vice Chair of the AP. I made the motion to close the Delmarva between the months of August, September, and October. It was passed by the AP. It got to the committee and got a little confusing on whether it was turtles or scallop mortality. I passed it because I voted for scallop mortality because we fished in there in August this year, and it was fishing in high-density scallops. When you can make an hour tow, fill the deck up and not cut it, and kill half of them, I think that's wrong. So I think if anybody can't get their trips in by the 1st of August or the 1st of September, it's I think it's something that the council should consider. Thank you.
Who else? Back to the council. Nancy?
Yeah, thanks, John. I just wanted to point out some statements that were made relative to the status of loggerhead turtles. It's actually something I know something about. And as an agency, we are, in fact, revisiting the stock assessment and redoing the stock assessment even as we speak. So I'm pretty familiar with the latest information on the status of loggerheads. A statement that the population as a whole in decline isn't absolutely accurate. Clearly, we're seeing the numbers of loggerheads on the nesting beaches, and particularly in the state of Florida, which may represent the first or second largest nesting aggregation in the Atlantic, are declining, and those declinings are clearly of concern. But at the same time, we see juvenile indices and other subadult indices increasing in particular areas. So what is going on with the population as a whole, quite frankly, is essentially unknown at this point. But it looks to be that while we seem to be able to, or the turtles seem to be able to pump out animals that survive to juvenile and subadult stages, we're not seeing them on the nesting beaches at this point. And the point that the animals move is a good point. The data in the time series that we have that we're working with, unfortunately, in the Northeast is a relatively short time period. And what we found in other areas, for example, in the Pacific and the Southeast, is the turtles move. And as a result, the approaches that were taken from the science side were for us to, in the Pacific and in the Atlantic, to provide information on a near real-time basis through aerial oversights and overflights and other ways to determine where the animals are. They do move. It's difficult with a very short time series to say that this represents a trend, unfortunately. You need a lot of data, a lot of time to say that, in fact, we have a trend, and that trend is indicative of where turtles are at any given time. They tend to be sensitive and respond to thermal changes, and the thermal changes tend to be what we monitor relative to where we think we can forecast where turtles are.
Ms. Nancy, anyone else on the council? Dave.
Yeah, I did just want to point out that as part of the committee discussion, looking at figure two on page 13 that Pat pointed out, the encounter rates are extremely low, and there was a question, there's still a question of whether there's any statistical difference between any of these catch rates. So you do get a little spike in that figure one, but is that statistically different from any other area? So it's not clear that it really is a different catch rate in the elephant trunk area to me at this point. And the other thing, just to reiterate what Kurt said, a lot of the discussion really did center around the value that these closures may have on scallops, but there was a lot of concern that we not do something on behalf of scallops, but call it a sea turtle action.
Okay, thanks for that. Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Twelve in favor, opposed. Two opposed, abstentions. One abstention, the motion carries 12-2-1. Okay, we're going to take a 10-minute break. You ready?
All right. I'm going to go ahead. Okay. So we're on decision five. We'll lift that get up. The motion is to move alternative 2.3.4.2.2 to considered but rejected section of the framework. And that is the seasonal closure to reduce potential interactions with sea turtles in Delmarva. That's a committee motion.
Committee motion, discussion or questions on the motion? Anyone in the audience? Gibb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. Just similarly to the elephant trunk, I've got a question on this one. As we move forward with the management of this, if we use turtle chains, in the previous discussion we were talking about, we'll collect new data and we'll know where the turtles are. My understanding is that the whole purpose of the turtle chains is that we won't know when those turtles are taken and that those are, in fact, takes under the ESA. So how are we ever going to collect that information to improve this management and possibly come up with area management? if we're effectively sweeping everything under the dredge. And I think that we've got some information here, and that we've seen that there are turtles in this area. They use the mid-Atlantic during the summer months, and this should get your support. If we don't do this, then I believe that we're getting deeper and deeper into problems with the ESA, and that the council and the agency are going to have to deal with that in the future by rolling this one back, and that this is a common sense approach, as Kirk Larson said earlier, that it has the support of the industry, protects the scallops, has benefits for the turtles, the long list of benefits far outseed the cost. So hope this will get your support. Thanks very much.
Anyone else in the audience? Ron.
Again, we've taken very strong actions to protect sea turtles. To say that we have to take every action under the book is ridiculous. In 2003, we had an estimated take somewhere between 400 and 700 turtles. 2004, the estimated high take was 180. 2005, it was zero. 2006, there was one take in the fishery in a dredge without chains, and I think it was in the month of September. In 2007 now, most of the takes have occurred in trawls. We've taken strong action by putting turtle chains on the dredges, raising the awareness of the fleet. We are solving the turtle issue. We do not need to introduce additional measures, especially when we don't know whether they're going to be helpful. In fact, may be counterproductive.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Any more questions? I'm ready for the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Eleven in favor. Opposed? Two opposed. Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries 11-2 with one abstention. Dave?
Okay, the sixth committee motion is to identify the no action alternative as preferred for crew size maximum in access areas. And that is, there would be no crew size limit.
Discussion or questions on the committee motion? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Any final thoughts? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 15. Anyone opposed? No. Unanimous. Motion carries. Dave?
Moving right along. Identify as preferred prohibition on deck loading with more than 50 bushels of in-shell scallops for all scallop vessels leaving an access area with no exceptions. And that's option A in the document.
Any discussion? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 14, unanimous. Karen, the previous motion, there weren't 15 votes. There were 14 votes. Thank you. Okay, Dave.
Can't even write the notes down fast enough here. Okay. 8 is identify as preferred option A for the quarterly hard tack for the interim period to limited entry for the general category fishery. That would be 35% in quarter 1, 40% in quarter 2, 15% in quarter 3, and 10% in quarter 4.
Discussion or questions on the committee preferred alternative? David.
Yeah, why is the breakdown the way it is? Does this represent the historic landings pattern of the fleet?
It's close to that, but it's a little more front-loaded, as Deirdre just described, because knowing that some of these access areas will be opening up right at the beginning of the fishing year, we're expecting a whole lot more effort to be to occur in the first and second quarters. One of the options, option B, I guess it was, left only 5% in the fourth quarter, and there was some concern that leaving that little would might negatively affect some of these late season fourth quarter fisheries that traditionally occur after November. That's the reasoning for it.
Okay, well, that was my concern, even with the one that we have as preferred. I'm just concerned that the people who you know, are seasonal participants in this fishery are, you know, maybe de facto being shut out by this. And I just, for the people in the audience, if you want to come and comment one way or the other, I would appreciate knowing how people feel.
Dave. It slipped my mind for the moment, but I just wanted to also point out that the rollover provisions are important here, too. If you were to save too much for the fourth quarter, you could end up not catching your allocation potentially. So if you remember, if we don't catch quarter one tack, it gets rolled over to quarter three. Likewise, two gets rolled over to quarter four. So it's an additional reason to want to front load a little bit.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Thirteen in favor, opposed? One opposed, abstentions? One abstention. 12, 1-1. Sorry. Having trouble counting today. Yeah, 13 to 1 sticking in my head. Dave?
I think, just to stay in order a little bit, there was not a committee motion on decision 8B, and I'm going to move that to be clear. The document talks about the committee supporting 2%, but we didn't formally have a vote on this. So my motion is that 2% of each access area be allocated to the general category to reduce derby fishing during the transition period.
Is there a second? Seconded by John Nelson. Discussion? Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Deirdre, could you refresh my memory, please, as the rationale for the 2% versus the 5% that we supported for the overall allocation?
Sure. At the committee level on the meeting on October 11th, ultimately the committee decided to go with 2% for the access areas, primarily because there was concern, you know, for derby fishing, and everyone recognizes that even 2% will still be a derby, but 2% is less than 5%. And the probably larger reason was that, particularly for 2008, when this interim period quarterly hard tax system will be in place, there will be a fair number of trips allocated to the elephant trunk because the limited access vessels will be getting 4 trips, and if you allocate 2% versus 5% to the elephant trunk area, the difference in that is, you know, about 1,000 trips is 2%, and 5% is closer to 2,600 trips. So there was concern that that is a huge portion of the total general category catch, and allocating, you know, more 5% for that first quarter is really going to have impacts on vessels from the north that probably wouldn't participate in that, and the whole entire quarter would almost close from elephant trunk fishing. So that was probably brought up by one participant that convinced there wasn't a motion, but there was some support for the 2%. And originally, if you remember, the committee was supportive of 2% because you want to reduce derby fishing, not allocate a bunch of effort in an area with these high concentrations of effort, because that would increase incentive for derby fishing.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. This will probably be the only motion that I'll speak to today, and I want to urge the council to support 5% in the access areas, which, except for closed area 2, which was the advisory panel recommendation and which is consistent with the position for the post-transition period. There are some other individuals from the fishery here who would speak to the specifics of it, of their rationale for that support. We do hope that that you would support 5% in the access areas during the transition period. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Please identify yourself when you get to the mic. Thanks. You have to hit the button there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Vappi's general category from Chatham. I don't see the logic in 2% over 5%. If there's less trips, make more of an effort. I mean, I'll be down there, and I was planning on, you know, maybe it lasting up to 3 months, you know, with 5%, and then probably the lightship would be open by the time that was open and come back and do that. At 2%, it's going to be like last year. It's going to be, no matter what the weather is, we're going to try and go. And last year was 2%, it lasted 15 days. I mean, there's going to be far less boats down there, that's for sure, as far as the Derby goes. There's going to be very few people down that area that are going to qualify, and it's just going to be the people from up this way that goes down there. And I just don't see how reducing the trips will reduce the Derby. Thank you.
Anyone else? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Keen, Keys was the one at the advisory panel that had pushed for the 5%. But then the next day he had come back, he had done some calculations, and then he was very adamant about being 2%. And he realized that what would happen at 5% is when the general category is restricted to, I think, 10% of the overall resource the first year and probably 5% the next or whatever, that most of the boats would be shut out. It would be the few boats that are able to rapidly make their trips into the, whether it's the closed elephant trunk area or the lightship area, that will get most of the resource, and then all of a sudden the rest of the fleet will find there's nothing left for them. So I didn't do the math. He did it, and that's just his thinking behind it.
Anyone else in the audience? David?
David Frula, Fisheries Survival Fund. I'd just like to understand how this decision, whether it changes or how it interrelates with the earlier decisions that have been made about allocations for 08 and 09. I just don't know how they interrelate. I mean, maybe the amount of scallops you're dealing with doesn't change access area trips for the GenCat. For the access area trips for the limited access fleet. I don't know whether this would change open area days if all of a sudden a good portion of the general category effort were moved back into access areas. I just don't know. But I'd like to at least sort of understand it if we could, please. And
yes, that's what came up at the advisory panel level, and was they were equally uncomfortable with not exactly knowing how this would affect things, and it's difficult when there's seven different scenarios because it would affect them all differently depending on which areas are open and closed. I guess briefly, because this level of effort, as David mentioned, is pretty small compared to the overall effort for the fishery, allocating 5% to the general category fishery in this transition period is not expected to affect or will not affect the allocations into the access areas for the limited access fishery. In terms of open areas, the general category fishery, if you go with 2%, will end up having more of their catch coming out of the open areas, But again, I don't believe that that ended up affecting the final open area days at sea that are allocated to the limited access fishery.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Bob Maxwell, Barnegat Lake, general category. I believe that under us having the 10% with a quarterly tack kind of adjust the Derby-style fishery, and I believe that the 5% in the access areas would be justifiable, and along with that, that would reduce the effort in the open bottom, which it kind of the consensus say that that's being overfished. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Back to the Richard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the simplest level, increasing the closed area percentage from 2 to 5 doesn't affect the full-time applicants, the full-time fishery participants. But if you, the general category is going to go fishing. And so if you transfer that effort to the open area, which has already shown a considerable drop in daily rate, that's going to directly affect the limited access participants considerably more. So I'd ask you to think about that in your vote.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Jim Odom.
I have a question of Deirdre. I can't understand how if you change it from 5% to 2%, it results in a diminished Derby fisheries. To me, it would accelerate the fisheries, and I was wondering if you could explain that.
I can try. There's been, you're not alone. The advisors were equally confused and didn't understand the committee's recommended alternative with this one being 2%. I'm going to just try to find in the documents. There is a rationale, but let me just find the page quickly so you can review it in more detail. I think it's near page 41 of the main framework document. Page 35. On the top of page 35 is the measure basically for 2% to reduce Derby fishing. And the paragraph there kind of tries to get at the committee discussion back in August when this alternative was developed. And the idea being that if a lower allocation is given to an area with higher scallop catch, the Derby effects are expected to be reduced comparing to allocating 5%. In general, if you're a vessel from way up north and you know 2% is going to be allocated to that area, maybe it'll close in 3 weeks, maybe it'll be 5 weeks, you may not bother to go down there to prosecute that fishery. If it's a 5% allocation, hard to say how fast it will go. If it'll go faster, maybe it'll be worth it to you to make that decision and participate in that fishery that you might not have bothered to do if it was a 2% allocation. In general, I think that was the intent of the committee's idea, that yes, it'll be a Derby either way, but maybe less vessels will decide to make the trip to go there unless they live closer by or so forth.
David.
Okay. I don't support the motion. I'm going to make a motion to amend. What I want to change is change it to 5% of each access area, except zero allocation for closed area 2, which is actually the language from the next thing we're going to be voting on.
Is there a second on the motion to amend? Seconded by Jim Odlin. Discussion on the motion to amend. Dave.
Yeah, again, just to the you know, the Derby fishery and early closures concern. This is just quick, but I think it's accurate off the top of my head. If during the first quarter the general category has 35% of their allocation, and they're only 10% in during this transition period of the overall quota, then they're going to get 3.5% of the allocation during the first quarter. If you give 5% to these access areas, you know you're going to get into the entire general category fishery being closed pretty early in first quarter. And the whole intent of this action was to keep them going throughout the year. So my feeling was going to 5% really does buy you into a coast-wide general category closure in quarter one at least, and perhaps in quarter two.
Anyone else on the motion to amend? In the audience, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm against this motion. The committee spent a lot of time. People spent a lot of time looking at all the complications, and still a lot of it is guesswork. And this is, you could be doing a real wrong thing here for a lot of the general category guys. It's relatively a small percentage of the guys make those trips into those access areas. And when you do something like a zero allocation in one area, you start overfishing in other areas as far as moving effort. It's, I think the preferred option is well thought out. I don't know all the pluses and minuses. I didn't do the math. The one person that did the math seemed to think it would be better for general category to have 2%. I don't care, but I know this is not a good idea because you're going to close that fishery every quarter.
Maggie Raymond. Dita, do you have a comment?
A little math, if you want me to read some of it, it'll help. But
are you done with your math, or do you want to keep? Okay. Maggie?
I support this motion. I just want to have to clarify that people keep referring to the committee decision on this. There is no committee decision on this. That's why Mr. Simpson made the motion on behalf of himself at the beginning. So there is no committee decision on this motion, and so even though people keep referring to one, there is none. Thank you.
David Frula.
David Frula for the Fishery Survival Fund. I just wanted to clarify that the concern about, if I understand it right now, listening to this, the concern is Derby fishing not in the access areas but in the overall general category as opposed to in the access areas. Okay.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Questions? The motion to amend? Tom Hill.
Yeah. Must be my lack of understanding the details. Could Deidre please explain how it is if the general category fishery is allocated 5% of a specific closed access area's TAC, how that would trigger a closure of the entire general category fishery? I would presume that the general category fishery is in the same constraints. I'm making a presumption that the general category fishery would have the same constraint that the limited access boats are, and that is that they would be fishing on a discrete portion of the TAC in the closed area, but that would not change what they would be allowed to catch in the overall TAC from the open access areas. Am I missing something? I'm sure there's a nuance, and I'm missing it, and I would appreciate an explanation.
D.
The added complication, Tom, is that this is relative only to the transition period, which, if you remember, is a quarterly hard tack on top of just the general access area management program. So, yes, it's true down the line and in future years, and also with these access areas under the transition, the general category fishery would be permitted to take all of those access area trips. However, there's also in the background a quarterly hard tack on the fishery as a whole each quarter, because the council recommended in Amendment 11 in a way to spread the general category allocation out over time to have an overall quarterly hard tack. So it does complicate the decision in the preceding motion of how we recommended dividing this quarterly hard tack up. And this was the quick math I was working on, which might help with this decision or not, is that if the preferred alternative that you went with from decision two is estimating about 44.4 million pounds for the entire fishery, 10% of that is 4.4 million pounds, which would be allocated essentially to the general category fishery. Again, there'll be some removals for set-asides and things like that, but just in general terms, if you take the 4.4 million pounds and you divide it into the four quarters based on the committee motion, 35% of that, for example, for quarter one, is roughly 1.5 million pounds. So under the 2% strategy, which would allocate 2% of elephant trunk and 2% of Nantucket Lightship in 2008, would be about 1,060 trips. The number of trips, by the way, is in document 10 on page 24. There are some tables there that have the number of trips expected for the general category under these various scenarios. Table 21 in that document shows that for 2008, the number of trips under 2% for the general category fisheries, roughly 1,060 for elephant trunk and 266 for Nantucket Lightship. When you multiply those by 400 pounds per trip, if you go with 2% for quarter one, again, as an example, you get about 400,000 pounds expected to be harvested out of the elephant trunk area. Again, that would be out of that 1.5 total amount of poundage available to the entire fishery for quarter one. If you go with a 5% allocation for quarter one for access areas, again, that's relative to elephant trunk because it opens in March 1st, you go down the table to 5%, it's roughly 2,600 trips expected to be allocated. You multiply that by 400 pounds, you get closer to a million and some change. So you can see that the difference between 400,000 and a million coming out of that one area will affect the amount of catch left for the rest of the general category fishery for the rest of the region. And the same would be the case for quarter two in terms of the Nantucket Lightship, but it's to a much less degree since there's much fewer trips.
Tom? I guess I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around what the difference in the strategy of people, quote, racing to the fish will be if you cut the volume of trips in half. Why will that discourage people from fishing hard in that area and catching whatever number of pounds they can? I don't know whether I'm for or opposed to this. I just am having a hard time figuring out the logic on either side. It would seem to me if the CPU rate is very high in that area, which is, I make the presumption, that's why people will fish there, is because the general aggregate of scallops is easier to catch, why that is going to be incentive enough for people to want to fish on it until it is caught. And then they're left to fish in the areas where the efficiency of the boats is much less than that. And so that means that, what? So they'll be able to fish in, and I'm going to use this, off of Cape Ann, where there's very few scallops right now, so they'll get to fish all day dragging their dredge around the bottom to catch 100 pounds. And I'm not sure it's just one way of looking at it. So we're going to increase the bottom time for the boats that are not allowed to, because we're afraid of a derby, we're going to try to tell them that they have to fish in other areas where the abundance of scallops is less. And I'm not sure which is worse.
Dave Gatlin.
Yeah, I'd like to speak in favor of the motion since I made it. I mean, I understand both sides of the argument, and both sides are compelling, but the fact is that whether it's 2% or 5%, we still have safety issues involved because we're creating a derby no matter what we do. But there are other considerations here that we should be mindful of. There's habitat considerations, and there's fuel cost considerations. And You know, probably diesel fuel by next spring will be $3.50 a gallon. Like Tom said, why do you want to be dragging around for 10 hours burning $3.50 diesel fuel when you can go tow for 20 minutes? And you know, it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And then we've got the habitat issue on top of it. You cover a lot more bottom in 8 hours than you cover in 20 minutes. So, you know, to some degree, we should try to maximize people's catch per unit effort, recognizing that no matter what we do, we're probably going to have this fishery shut down, I believe, under any of these scenarios. The minute we've gone to hard tax and percentages and everything else, we've guaranteed things are going to shut down. So we may as well, you know, look the devil in the eye. We made the deal. And you know, now he's sitting on our shoulder coming home to roost. So, you know, anyway, I support the motion.
What else in the council? Pat.
I support the motion as well. I think the I think we need to come back to Richard's point that what we want to do is, in fact, move these vessels into the access areas and not have them directing all their effort into the open areas. And I think this would be more effective in doing that.
Tom Hill.
Yeah, just one final question. Is there not a way of allocating these trips within the document specifically to the boats proportionately? So that, no, there is not. So there's no way to, because that would eliminate the Derby, if you could do that. Okay, thank you.
Okay, ready for the question? All those in favor on the motion to amend, please raise your hand. Thirteen in favor, opposed. Two opposed. Motion to amend carries 13-2. It's now the main motion. All those in favor of the main motion as amended, please raise your hand. Fifteen for real this time. Unanimous. Dave?
My first defeat. Decision 9 refers to after the transition period, and that is to select a 5% allocation for the general category fishery in all access areas after the transition period is over, except 0% in closed area 2. That's a committee motion.
Discussion on the committee motion. Questions? Anyone in the audience? Back to the count. Kirk.
Yeah, I have a question on this for maybe Deirdre. Is this 5% allocation for general category and limited access general category fisheries? Is it added together, or is there another 0.5% for the limited access vessels? Thank you.
I think that's important to clarify. Thanks, Kurt. The way Amendment 11 was set forward is that the intention was that any allocation to the general category fishery and access areas would be for general category limited access vessels, and the overall allocation being 5%, that this would be 5% just for general category qualifiers. The idea would then be that 0.5% on top of this would be allocated to the limited access fishery vessels that qualify for a general category permit as well. But you are correct that that is not clear in this motion, and perhaps we should add it so it's clear. Well, can I just clarify one other thing? It's not necessary to clarify it in the earlier motion because under the transition period, those vessels, both general category qualifiers and limited access vessels that qualify for a general category permit, would be under the same blanket and they would be under the same restrictions during that transition period. However, this is in reference to the post-transition period, which would be the limited entry program where they would be separate.
Dave?
Yeah, I would like to perfect that motion to say and 0.5% for limited access vessels fishing under general category.
Okay, that's clear, right? Still in the audience. We'll come back to the council. Ron?
Ron Smolowitz. I just have a question. Do we have any idea in the vessels that are going to qualify for general category, how many of them historically are directed scalloping versus how many are bycatch? Historically, you know, in the groundfish fleet.
You know, it's difficult to come up with those kind of figures. It's hard to tell exactly what kind of fisheries people are in from the data. It was reviewed in Amendment 11 to try to identify which types of vessels were part of the general category fishery. And I don't have that to memory. It's in Amendment 11 in terms of how many are more directed and how many are more incidental. While I have the microphone, I need to think about this a little more, actually, if this is necessary. I have to come back to it. Thank you.
I just that the decisions, like the last vote and this vote, are making very major decisions depending on the makeup of that general category fleet. And it's just something that you need to be aware of. It doesn't necessarily impact the limited access guys, but the last vote and this one, for example, basically says that you have to be a directed vessel because there won't be anything left if you're involved in another fishery and historically have depended on scallops as a bycatch or an activity that you do when you completed your regular fishery. You're totally reshaping the fishery with these motions without understanding what the fishery is.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay. Yes, sir.
Steve Norberg, Karina. Ron makes a pretty good point there because when you look at the data, it just distinguishes three gear types, which are dredges, otter trawl, and other. And if you look at the figures that were published most recently, I believe, from March, the first March through July, the dredge boats caught, said 96% in March. The otter trawl boats caught 1%, and the other caught 3%. But then if you go to July, in the summer, that changes to 93% for dredges, and the other 7% is other, and still 1% otter trawl. Of course, the little boats don't really go in the wintertime, so that makes sense. In the warmer months, they're going to go. But it doesn't distinguish between dredges, who are just in the general category fishery, like the bycatch boats, or the boats that are limited access that also have the general category permit. And I think that figure has to be, you know, someone has to figure this out before you go ahead with these because, like Ron said, it's going to drastically affect fishery. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Dee.
I apologize. I might have spoken too quickly before in terms of the need to add this because Kurt brought this up. But my memory really of what I was speaking before was that the intent of Amendment 11 and what it says is a 5% allocation for general category qualifiers of the overall TAC and a 0.5% allocation for limited access vessels that qualify for the overall TAC overall. So that's out of the total catch. That's the intent of Amendment 11. Amendment 11 then says any percentage given to the general category fishery in general from the access areas would be decided in a future framework. So it's not separated out for access areas yet. We can include this alternative, and basically what it would do is there would be a certain number of trips that general category qualifiers would be given and a certain number of trips that limited access general category qualifiers would be given. But this would be something not in the document and was not kind of broken out this way. I think the way the document's written now is that it would be a 5% allocation that any general category qualifier could take or any limited access general category qualifier could take the way that it is now. So I just wanted to clarify that because I think I gave you the impression that Amendment 11 had made this decision when really the amendment left the access area allocations to be determined in a framework. I was missing some of the comments that have been going on, but I just want to remind people that the overall allocation decision was made in the amendment. This isn't necessarily putting people in boxes in the way it's being termed. It's an allocation for an area for vessels to take it if they want. This is under the IFQ period, so in the future when a individual vessel is given their quota, they can fish it where they want, basically in an open area or in an access area that's open if they choose to go there before it closes, if that helps.
Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just another technical correction. There's a part of it that's unclear. What it should say is the motion was perfected to read, to select allocations, plural, of 5% for general category and 0.5% for limited access. It's not clear from that where the 0.5% comes from.
You want that, and you want the motion to be read? You're just switching some words around, right, Dave?
Just switching a couple of words around. Just make it clear. It's not clear right now.
It's the way it's phrased. Okay, if you want to guide Karen or Juanita.
The motion is effected to read select allocations, plural, of 5% for general category. And, now it's correct.
Is there any objection from the council on the rephrasing? Okay, Pat?
Well, given Deirdre's comments, I would suggest that we take that language back out again and go back to the original committee motion. I think it's clearer and it's less complicated.
Okay, that language kind of just worked its way into the motion. In light of what we heard from staff, Dave, do you think that?
Yeah, I was going to ask about the procedure of this. Was that what I made a perfection, or did it require a second? So, and now it's really becoming important. I think it would be wise to go back to just the committee motion.
Okay.
So it would be understood that the limited access fishing under general category would be part of this 5%.
Council, any objection to that? Okay, we'll do that then. We'll take that out. Okay, anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Unanimous.
Okay. Motion 10 on decision 10 is recommend alternative 2 as preferred alternative for cost recovery for the IFQ program. IFQ shareholder pays directly. Refine alternative 2 so it includes an average annual value rather than a trip-by-trip value per vessel. And it is understood that owners always are responsible for payment even if the quota is leased.
Okay, discussion on the committee motion. Pat.
Just one request of the council. We've been looking at this language in the document on page 36 a little bit over the last few days and think that maybe the timing isn't quite workable when you measure it with the permit program, which we'd like to be able to do. And so what we'd like to do is be able to work with Deirdre after the council approves this to just work out some of the details and the logistics of the process.
Does that mean there may be a slight delay in implementing the recovery program?
No, I think we just need to change a couple of the dates in here, or maybe even take the dates out all together and just put them in the regulations. And I think we just would like it to mesh a little bit more closely with the timing of permit renewals.
Anyone on the council? Dave Gaetham.
Yeah, maybe this is the same as what Pat's saying, but how can you figure out the average annual cost before the year is over? How are you going to collect this money during the year if you can't figure it out till after the year is over?
I thought that was some of what Pat was getting at, and in the decision document in the description for the cost recovery, there's a reference to the first three quarters, essentially, of the year, and that the fee would be collected during the fourth quarter, which I think is how it's written into Magnuson, I believe. There was some discussion of this fee being collected at the end of the year. So that's part of it. You wouldn't have the last quarter values to include in the average just to facilitate administration of this.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, what I want to avoid is the way you're going to collect this money is with the threat of not renewing people's permits if they don't pay. And so you have to come up with a method of, if it's the first three quarters, that's fine, and you pay before you renew your permit by the end of the fourth quarter, or you sit home, or you have your permit confiscated, that's fine too. You know, but there has to be some method of guaranteeing people pay before they get a license. And so I have no problem with allowing as much latitude as is necessary. I just want to make sure the motion reflects that.
You want the motion to reflect that?
That's my question. Does the motion as it's worded right now reflect that, what Pat had asked for?
Pat.
I think in general the document does, and that we just need to do a better job of explaining that link to the permit renewal process.
Okay, so if we vote for this motion as it's written, you have the latitude you need to put in a process that works. Okay.
Anyone else on the council? Audience? Back to the council, ready for the question. All those in favor? Fifteen, unanimous. D? Or Dave?
Okay, we're going to skip over. The next topic is the Northern Gulf of Maine. Should we breeze through the rest of this and come back to that, or?
Yeah, we'll do that after lunch. So keep chugging along. We'll skip over it.
Okay. Save the best for last. Then we'll move to decision 12. And I have a motion myself for this one, which she already has up. Thank you. So provided that Amendment 11 is implemented with such a requirement, use 50,000 pounds recommended by the PDT as the incidental catch mortality estimate to be removed from the total projected catch before allocations are made.
Is there a second? Seconded by John Nelson. Dave, want to give a little rationale? It's on the board here.
Yeah, there's a requirement in Amendment 11 that this incidental catch mortality that we expect may go up, or the PDT advised may go up, because now there are more vessels that don't qualify under general category. They'll be landing more scallops under that 40-pound per day provision. I think their initial estimates were somewhere around half of this, 23 or 25 or 27,000 pounds. I can't remember. But they felt they could envision 50,000 pounds easily being landed. So, and Amendment 11 requires that all the mortality be accounted for. So this would be simply that small estimate taken off the top at the beginning.
Okay, anyone on the council? Audience? D?
I'm sorry, I just have a question so I can change the way the document's written now. So for this motion, is it then assumed that I should add something to Framework 19 that says if Amendment 11 does not implement such an incidental catch, basically provision, then no initial landing should be removed from the fishery to account for that? Is that assumed?
That's what I intended, yeah.
Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Call a question. You ready? All those in favor? Put your hands down. Pat?
I'm sorry. I don't think that we would. I don't think that makes sense, actually, that we still need to account for the mortality. So whether Amendment 11 is or isn't approved to include that requirement, the council has a responsibility to account for the mortality. So I think you need to remove the part that says provided Amendment 11 is implemented.
Dave, when the committee didn't make a motion, did you discuss this at all? Was there a presumption that the service was going to implement Amendment 11 without a way to deal with the incidental?
Yeah, it really was presumed Amendment 11 would be in place, and since this was in response to an Amendment 11 feature, I included that language, but I take Pat's point that Magnuson still requires that you account for all the immortality, so it may be appropriate to remove the preamble there referring to Amendment 11.
Does a seconder agree? Okay. Friendly, we'll just remove the first part of the motion. Okay. Anything further on this motion? Pat, you all set? Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fifteen, unanimous.
Okay, the next one is decision 13. I need to just get in front of me. The overfishing definition. The committee didn't have a motion on this either, and I crafted what you see up there to clarify and, you know, explicitly get some of this out there, and that would be to adopt the biomass target, which is currently 108,600 metric tons, and threshold currently 54,300 metric tons, reference points estimated using the CASA model endorsed in SAW 45, further adopt the overfishing threshold of FMAX currently estimated at 0.29 using the CASA model, and and a fishing mortality target of F equals 0.2 as recommended by the PDT. I was going to add some language to this after I gave it to Karen, which at the end, after PDT, it would say, and adopted by the council in September, because we really did address this already. Along with that, in front of between and A, and the where before A fishing mortality target down at the end there, and just insert reaffirm.
Okay, is there a second? Seconded by John Nelson. Discussion. Audience? Dave Frula.
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. I want to focus on the target, the mortality rate target of F equals 0.20. The document that you have before you explains that the model would set that at F equals 0.23. That's the best scientific information available. That's what you got out of your model. The PDT is asked to be more precautionary. I think that if you need precaution, there's flexibility within Amendment 10 in terms of how open area days are allocated to have some, you know, flexibility based on the spatial distribution of the scallops, but to sort of, as an ad hoc matter, change your target from what your models are showing doesn't make any sense. You wouldn't go higher, but, I mean, to go lower just seems, it's adding precaution, it's adding an extra buffer zone here when the resource is in good shape. And the reason for buffers, as I understand it, between your targets and your thresholds tend to be because the fishery is not being able to be managed very precisely. In this instance, with scallops, more and more of the catches are coming through hard tack management, whether in an access area or through now a general category, IFQ. So less and less of this is being managed sort of as a days at sea, where you have any really sort of uncertainties as to what the catches are going to be. And then the other point, so that would argue to me to be to follow the model, because, again, the model is based on different considerations and different inputs and a little bit different bases in the years of the scallops. So to make the model work as an integrated unit makes some sense. Again, you have the flexibility under Amendment 10 to refine that from year to year if you have to in terms of your cash levels. And, again, in going back to the motions from the council meeting, it said to include F equals 0.20 as an alternative. That wasn't a final decision, including something as an alternative on anything. So I hope that someone would move to amend the target and then move along with us. Thank you.
Anyone else? D?
I just want to respond because I think there may be perhaps the document isn't as clear as it should be. And we did go through this at the last council meeting, but I think it's worth going through it a little bit again because perhaps there's some wording issues in the document. On page 45, Mr. Frula was suggesting that the model is outputting some sort of target, and it is not. In the table on 25, on page 45, the column all the way to the right is basically the model outputs using either the rescaled F or the CASA model. Those are the outputs of the model for 2006. That's what the model assumes is the biomass and fishing mortality for 2006. It's not the target. So the 166 million metric tons is what the model is estimating for biomass, and 0.23 is what the model is estimating for actual fishing mortality in 2006. The model does not whatsoever pump out a target. Some of the wording in this could be confusing, and I take full blame for that. Mixing threshold, target, current estimate things is very possible. And I apologize if that has added to any confusion. But definitely the model, the CASA model, those figures, the 0.23 reference is related to the estimate for 2006. It's not a target at all. And in terms of the document adding on page 47 an alternative to maintain this target was based on the discussion we had at the last council meeting. Again, as I mentioned this morning, we wouldn't normally have even revisited the target except that we had a new threshold and a new reference point, so it seemed to go along with that you'd want to basically reaffirm either keeping the target or revising it. And since it was not suggested to revise it, none of the alternatives in the document include anything that estimate with a higher F target at this point. So I just wanted to clarify that about the model so people weren't confused that, in fact, the model was projecting some kind of target. It's definitely a council decision.
Thanks, D. Okay, who's in charge over there? Drew, you going to go, or is Ron in charge? Okay.
Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. I think there's some confusion about the 0.23 in that there's multiple 0.23s being discussed as far as F rates. Optimum yield as defined under Amendment 10 is 80% of FMSOI. So at the old F threshold of 0.24, 80% of that was F.2. Now if you increase the F threshold to 0.29, 80% or optimum yield is 0.23. So the optimum yield fishing rate as defined in the amendment is F.23. If you set it at F.20, you are fishing below optimum yield, which I would state is the goal. National Standard 1 requires the council to manage this fishery to optimum yield. So you'll be intentionally putting in an increased buffer below 80% of FMSOI, which is the defined optimum yield in the amendment, and you'll be increasing precaution at a time where you have more certainty in the fishery management process than you ever have.
Now, Ron.
Thank you, Ron Smolowitz. Drew pointed out the technical issue, which I tried to point out earlier, is that we have now gone to a fishery that is, we're not talking about worrying about severe depletion, overfishing. We're talking about maximizing the benefits to the nation, achieving optimum yield. We have a biomass out there, 350 million pounds, that is growing. That means we should be producing out of this fishery somewhere on the order of 70 to 80 million pounds a year. And this council is setting the target at 45 million pounds. There's about 25 million pounds a year not being harvested at $7 a pound ex vessel. We're talking a fishery that's a value to from Virginia to Maine of almost $1 billion being left on the bottom every year in value to the economy. This council needs to at least develop a plan of what you want to achieve in the long term from this fishery. And it should not be 45 million pounds. It should be something on the order of 70 million pounds annually. And we could probably even do better than that if we started to refine the way we produce scallops, things that I brought up in the past in Amendment 6, seeding and predator control and things like that. So truly, it's very conservative to even go to the 0.23 level because we're seeing such great rebuilding. Thank you.
I have a question. I don't know if it's for Dave or Ron or Drew. I thought I remembered in September you supported 0.2. And did something change between September and now? Did you get a look at new information?
That's correct. When we were supporting, I supported 0.2. And that was, again, we had no data in front of us. And I didn't realize how much of the resource was not being considered in the biomass estimates. I thought that they had solved the problem and were sending the cruise ship, the Albatross, closer to shore, that the SMAS survey was covering a broader area. And then I thought easily we would see the 40 and 50 open area days currently, and hopefully we'd revisit the habitat areas when we got to the amendment. And then I started seeing all sorts of different things occurring, a lot of the biomass not being monitored, and that people keep on thinking that we're at a point where we have to pull back effort. So it became obvious to me we're not achieving anywhere near optimum yield. We keep on shrinking and shrinking the fishery when we should be expanding it. We've never seen so many scallops inshore in the Mid-Atlantic as we're seeing right now. And there's major changes occurring, and we're not monitoring it.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Dave.
Yeah, again, just to make sure the rationale for the motion is on the table. The CASA model does represent the best available science, and that's the reason for embracing the target and threshold and Fmax values that come out of that model. Setting the target an F of 0.2 is in recognition that the fishing mortality is not uniformly distributed in the scallop fishery, but is prone to significant localized overfishing. Setting a slightly more conservative target fishing rate will help to mitigate localized depletion of the scallop resource in open areas. And if you want to take a look at page 129 in the document, table 69. Yeah. If you look at the under the scenarios, take the preferred, the second column in the open box, you can look at the estimates of fishing mortality in the open areas, and you see they're quite wide ranging. They don't average they're not all close to 0.22. If you look at the South Channel, the area that was proposed to be closed, the F projected as 1.45. So where scallops are abundant, the fishing mortality is going to be extremely high, and that's yet another reason to be cautious in setting the target fishing rates. The other point, and Dvorak can probably help me a little bit with this part, is I think in these overall calculations of fishing mortality, the Hudson, the habitat closed areas, the biomass in those closed areas is included in that average F estimate. So you have an F of zero representing, I think it's 21% of the resource, which is not available to harvest. It is a shame from an optimizing yield perspective from scallops, but really that's not available, and it's not on the table to currently calculate our target fishing mortality estimates from. So really we should be doing it based on the 79% that is available to try to maximize the yield from that resource. So there's another perspective on this to consider. It is a shame, but that's how it is right now. I think those are the main points I wanted to make right now. There was another one, but it slipped my mind.
Thanks, Dave. Pat?
Well, to add to that and to speak directly to the Amendment 10 issue, the Amendment 10 does not hardwire the 80% level. In fact, the intent was that that be a maximum. We certainly wouldn't want to go over that. And it acknowledges that we need to look at localized overfishing and that the PDT can make recommendations for targets that are lower than the 80% level to address the issue of localized overfishing, and that's exactly what's happened in this situation. And I think there's one other thing to remember here. Although we've targeted the 0.2 in the past, in fact, there have been years when we've not achieved that 0.2. And so we don't have a management program yet that can completely take into account all of the fishing mortality and that gives us that kind of exact information with respect to trying to achieve the target.
Dave, it always takes me a minute to remember the last question or point I have. Dvorak, and I don't know the answer to this, which I'm told you should never ask a question if you don't already know the answer, but in terms of the unaccounted for biomass question, because the survey doesn't cover everywhere that scallops occur, it seems to me that the CASA model is an improvement in that regard because it is using the commercial fishery landings per unit effort in these areas, even though they're not surveyed. So that biomass does, it may not be fully accounted for, but certainly it's a vast improvement over what we used to do. And you have the size composition. Ron mentioned that off of New Jersey we're seeing four age classes. Now, presumably those trips are being sampled shoreside for size composition and so forth. So even that detailed information should be available and incorporated into the assessment and the recent estimates of available biomass from the CASA model. Is that right?
That's basically right. The CASA model takes the surveys as relative indices of abundance, so if a small amount of area isn't surveyed, that would be, as long as the biomass trends in those areas are the same as the rest of the areas, then eventually it gets scaled to the catch. So that if it's things are being caught in that area, that's included in the biomass.
Anyone else? Okay, ready for the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Two opposed. Motion carries 13-2. We have time for one more, Dave.
I think so. If I can get back on track. We're on. Deirdre?
I was just going to recommend this one is a little long, and it will take some time to explain the observer recommended changes.
How about 16?
Okay. 15 or 16 or both.
Yeah, I think you could do 15 and 16. Quick.
You want to jump to 15 and 16? Okay. Decision 15 is in regard to the 30-day power down provision, and I would move that we include a 30-day power down provision in Framework 19 as provided under the multi-species permits, modeled after the multi-species permits.
Seconded by John Nelson. Discussion? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Last chance. Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 15. Unanimous.
Decision 16?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Include text in Framework 19 to clarify that a vessel may leave port on an access area trip before the area opens but may not enter the area until it opens.
Seconded by John Nelson. Dynamic duo. Discussion on the motion. Audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 15. Unanimous. Okay, we're going to break for lunch. At 1:15, we'll have a public comment period. Although the executive director suggests that we get a little extra time for lunch because it's difficult to get there and back. So we'll come back at 1:30.